Welcome to Mormonland. I'm managing editor Dave Noyce, and I oversee our faith coverage. I'm joined again by senior religion reporter Peggy Fletcher Stack. Hello, Peggy.
Hi, Dave.
Well, it's been a year of change in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It started way back on January 2nd with the introduction of retooled temple ceremonies and continued throughout the year. The reversal of the LGBTQ policy, a new stance on civil wedding ceremonies, slacks for sister missionaries, weekly calls home by missionaries, female witnesses at baptisms and temple sealings, and that's just a partial list. Blogger Jenny Dye, co-host of the Mormon News Report podcast, has been tracking and commenting on these developments throughout the year. She joins us today to talk about this deluge of changes. Jenny, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So, Jenny, give our listeners just a little bit of biographical information about yourself, and then touch on how and why the Mormon News Report came to be.
Sure. Okay. I actually grew up in New York and moved to Utah at age 19. It was supposed to have been a temporary stop in my life, and here we are.
And you're still here.
Yes, exactly. And so I live in the Salt Lake area, and I'm married. I've got six kids, five alive, one in heaven. I've got three stepchildren, and So I have worked in social media. I've been a blogger since 2005, and that has led to some really cool professional opportunities. I'm a contributor on the podcast The Cultural Hall, and I have been since its inception, and I still contribute there. Mormon News Report began kind of in collaboration with The Cultural Hall, and then back in, I believe, July maybe of 2017 is when it began. Mm-hmm. And so now we're separate entities, still friends, you know, all on good terms. And my co-host Brant Malone lives in the Detroit area, and we record weekly.
Uh-huh. And what does your podcast touch on? I mean, just news developments in and about the church, kind of?
Yeah, and whether it has to do with changes in the church or policy, also any newsworthy items that have to do with people in and maybe not anymore in the church. Also, Brant, for being a Michigander, mm-hmm. is really interested in Utah politics, so we get a touch of that as well.
A little bit of that. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's dive into some of the things that happened during
Perfect.
The year. And let's start with temple.
Okay.
And the more, in this case, gender-inclusive language in temple rites.
Yes.
Let me ask you, Jenny, how did you personally feel about those changes, and what do you think the effect has been?
I was so thrilled. I happened to go to the temple on January 2nd because I had seen people talking about it on Twitter, and so we went to see what it was all about. And to be honest with you, there are many things, as far as the changes go, that to me were answers to prayer. And I know that that's not, that I'm not alone in that. There were things that were confusing to me that just kind of didn't sit well with me, and for me it was very positive overall.
What have you heard from membership or maybe people you've had on the podcast about those things?
A lot of the same, as well. You know, there has been kind of, I mean, as was reported in real time, as we were all kind of experiencing it, and more people were talking about it publicly, and also with the, I don't know if constraints is the correct term, but of what we say that we will talk about and won't talk about outside of the temple. I know that there were some people that had quite a bit of conflict within themselves, simply from the experience of having attended the temple for so long and having had the experiences that I mentioned, that I had just kind of questions and is this right? It doesn't feel right, or completely accurate, I guess I should say. And to have these changes happen with little to no explanation of why or how, or, you know, it came out later that these are changes that had been in the works potentially for months, and that would have been helpful to know. I think the more transparency and the more information that is given, the better overall, and this was certainly the case for that.
Right.
And are you speaking largely of the gender equity changes?
Yes, absolutely. The idea that that women in any way would be subservient to men in any capacity, specifically to their husbands, where men would need to be intermediaries between women and the Lord. Yes, that seems to be where a lot of the bulk of the talk in general has come from.
So staying on this theme of the temple, what did you think about the church changing the required waiting period between a civil ceremony and a sealing in the temple, reducing it to essentially the same day like it is everywhere else outside of the U.S.? What did you think about that?
Right. That for me was very bittersweet, and I'll tell you why. I was really excited about it. Like you mentioned, Peggy, it's in line with places outside the U.S. and Canada where a public or civil ceremony is required before an additional religious ceremony for a wedding, allowing people to have a celebration, a ceremony with anyone, completely inclusive of all friends and family members, regardless of their affiliation with or even meeting the required standards to enter the temple. And then afterwards, being able to go to the sealing immediately without the waiting period of a year. I love that it is aligned now with that. There were a lot of problematic things with the waiting period, mainly, and it's been talked about before, but mainly because if people were choosing to not be married in the temple, there was a cultural assumption that that equaled some sort of unworthiness, usually having to do with sexual impropriety, and all of that is just so nobody's business at all. My personal opinion is that anything having to do with the temple ought to be personal, ought not to be something where we're worried about what other people are thinking. So on the one hand, I was very, very glad to see that this was the case, that it no longer, and I realize there will be an adjustment period of many years before people will really maybe internalize, like, oh, they're getting married civilly and then having a sealing, you know, and not kind of have those cultural assumptions. On the other hand, for myself, as I mentioned, I grew up in New York, and I also mentioned that I have stepchildren. So I've been married twice, both times in a temple. And so two times in my life, specifically my dad and my sister, have traveled across this country for the occasion of my wedding and not been able to participate. Mm-hmm. And that is awful. I can really see how those sorts of things can cause major rifts within families. And I actually don't think that it is in line with what we teach about families to require someone to choose all your family members or this policy, this standard we have in place. I'm very grateful, and I'm you know, that my relatives did that. But specifically for me, it hit, maybe because my second marriage was so recent, about how I, at that point, I ached for all of our children to be involved. There's nothing I would have loved more than to have had a civil ceremony with all of our children and the couple of friends and family members too that waited outside the temple while we were married. That would have actually been ideal for me, and at that time it just wasn't an option. Now I'm glad that it is for others.
Did this happening, this announcement, mm-hmm. and this change, like you say, you embrace it, you just obviously wish it had been in place earlier. Mm-hmm. Did that bring back some pain in for you and maybe with family members? Is that's what you're saying?
Exactly. Sort of? Yes, yeah. Exactly. I mean, the first time I was married, you know, was over 20 years ago. And for that entire period, I've had friends from high school and family members, extended family members, who have said, well, it just didn't make any sense to me why I couldn't go to your wedding. I just think that that's awful. And to be frank, I agree with them. And so now, so I did actually, I remember actually being quite surprised at my reaction, which was that I was like, oh, kind of good, another great change, check, and then feeling this kind of anger. But I want that. That's, you know, this kind of injustice. That's not fair. It really was a roller coaster for me personally.
So another change that's happened this year is allowing missionaries to phone home mm-hmm. every week as opposed to twice a year, Christmas and Mother's Day.
Yes.
What do you think about that? How have you experienced that?
Well, for me, that was the biggest change of the year, one of the biggest changes of my lifetime. I believe it happened, it was announced on Friday, February 15th. The reason it's so dear to my heart is because I have a daughter who is on a mission. She will be home tomorrow. So she began her mission without this in place. And then now for the second half of her mission, it has been in place.
Where is she?
She's in Edmonton, Canada. And so, yeah, for us, the ability to talk, it's great because Alberta is the same time zone as Utah. Oh. And so that, you know, was not a complication.
You don't have to make big plans about, right, okay.
Right, which I know many people do. At the time, I was on Radio West as the missionary mom, talking with Doug Fabrizio about this and the kind of potential positives and negatives that are in place. I think that for this generation who has grown up with access to friends and family in their pocket, to have that taken away so abruptly is major. I speculated that with the lowering of the missionary age and the increase of missionaries who have come home early from their missions, I wondered for how many of them, had they been able to touch base, you know, once a week with home, if that would have given them just what they needed to keep going. Mm-hmm. And so kind of similar to the change in the marriage thing, you know, I kind of had some sadness in my heart for those that weren't able to partake of it. For us, it's been very good. For my daughter, she's the type of person, she doesn't like to type and write out things, and she found it just taking the time to sit down and write an email weekly, she found that burdensome, and it was hard for her to get things done on her preparation day that she otherwise wanted to do. So for her, it was a very positive thing.
Have you been doing it every week?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And one thing, and I had mentioned this before, but, you know, I think that as parents of missionaries, we really ought to understand that this is intended for it to be missionary-led, as in, I'm not going to hog her whole day. You know, I'm not going to take it. It is her day. It is her option to reach out. Just like there were times when at the end of the day, I'd get a quick email, sorry, Mom, didn't have time today. I'll talk to you next week. We need to be understanding that if our kids are out there and are otherwise occupied or maybe even don't want to talk, that email will do, and be sensitive to that. And again, I think it's great to have it be missionary-led.
Have you talked to other moms, missionary moms or dads, that have had a different experience? Or maybe they don't like it so much, or they...
Any parents that I've talked with who have had any sort of semblance of not liking it has been related to their missionaries being in faraway time zones, requiring them to be up in the middle of the night, and they kind of, after a while, get to the point where they're like, okay, I'm sorry, I have to go to bed, when it's clear that their kid wants to talk more. And then others who have expressed sadness because their child may be serving in an area so remote that it isn't even an option. Mm. So
how long do the phone – there probably varies the length of the phone calls. Mm-hmm. Like what has been, say, the longest and the shortest calls that you've had?
Well, and depending on the area she is and our Wi-Fi connection, sometimes they're dropped immediately and then okay. There's a quick call back. And she has the experience, which I don't even think is unique at this point, where she has me and then she also has her dad. And so she gets, you know, more than one phone call. Mm. And so there have been times when it's been rather lengthy, over an hour mm-hmm. even, and other times, like I said, where it's just a quick touch base. Do you need anything? Nope, I'm great. Do you guys need anything? Nope. Okay, great. So.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Let's go to April. The church reversed its LGBTQ policy, the November 2015, mm-hmm. what's been called the exclusion policy.
Right.
Can I ask, what was your reaction about that, about FACE, just your own personal reaction to it?
About the policy
the
in November?
The policy and maybe its reversal.
Okay, so in November of 2015 is when the policy was issued, and that was another issue where I just found myself completely beside myself. I didn't understand it. I listened to a lot of different sides of it about I listened to a lot of different sides. Mm-hmm. And for me personally, it just I couldn't see it was a journey for me of am I not understanding this right? What do I need to study about it more? And I really had a hard time with it. And so to have the reversal again, I was like, that's great. I don't think it should have been in place to begin with, personally. And, a lot of talk about the exclusionary policy or the November 2015 policy, there's been a connected discussion about suicide, about teen suicide, about LGBTQ suicide specifically in Utah. And so, this is a layered conversation. We could talk about it, mm-hmm. This alone for an hour. But I was glad to see it. With these announcements and these changes in policy and in procedure, one thing that I see a lot of people talking about is, okay, but what about before? And kind of the desire for an apology or an explanation or more talk about it. And that just doesn't seem to be in the works. It doesn't seem to be part of the formula as far as, we realize that we've looked at these numbers, we've heard what you've said, and that's why this change has come about. I mean, as is the case, it happens by revelation. And so I just think that there's a desire out there, a hunger for more information.
That's what I was going to ask you, actually. Were you satisfied with how how the reversal happened? I mean, how it was handled? I mean, little explanation mm-hmm. about previous and why now. Were you satisfied with that, or would you like to see more? You referenced transparency a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
So.
No, I wasn't satisfied. I'm also not. That's not their job to satisfy me. I would have liked, just like any sincere apology, to issue an apology, to issue why there's an apology, why there's a change, is to say, I see what you're saying, I see where you're coming from, I see your hurt, and I acknowledge it. But again, this is not an apology. This is not an apologetic procedure. This is about policy. It's about operation. And so, whereas I have a lot of feelings about a lot of things, that's not part of how it goes down.
So let's shift over to the church's new children and youth program.
Yes,
which they kind of unveiled earlier this year, but then they kept adding little details of it until it led up to the big announcement or event.
The face-to-face.
The Q&A.
Yeah. Q&A mm-hmm. with Elder Garrett Gong. What do you think about that, and what have you heard?
Gosh, okay. I don't know if you happened to watch the face-to-face.
I totally reported it.
Okay.
Yeah.
There was so much information. So much. It was saturated with, okay, wait, what? I'm trying to pay attention to what it means for primary, and then they're on to talking about the youth and what all entails. There was a lot of information there. And just like everything else, like two-hour church, like the Come Follow Me curriculum, the anything having to do with the home-centered church supported basis of gospel living and learning, this is going to require an adjustment period. And I think it will require an adjustment period specifically from parents and leaders of the youth as they really try to implement having this be youth-led. I think one thing that we might struggle with is a lack of instruction. For them to have said, do what works for you. for a lot of people, that is difficult.
Like, do what?
Right? Yeah. What do we do? What does that look like? But I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful that they, are looking at, there, for a lot of areas, there aren't enough young women to have a 3 or 4 person class presidency for each two-year age group or class. I think it's more inclusive. I think, again, there will be an adjustment period. I thought it was very interesting to note that there's now an Aaronic priesthood theme to be recited. I think that the getting rid of activity days, but calling it primary activities to include girls and boys in that. And I think a lot of that has to do, of course, with the elimination of scouts beginning in 2020. I think it's awesome that they have an app, and I'm really eager to see what that looks like, see the functionality of it. I think that's smart because that's where kids live, but also Elder Gong made, made exception for those kids who aren't allowed to have a device that their parents don't want them to. They said there's still the information available in the books. Mm-hmm.
So I was going to ask about the theme, the Aaronic priesthood quorum theme. Mm-hmm. It was interesting because a change was made to the young women theme in the fall conference.
Yes.
Yeah. Where a reference to, it was a reference to heavenly parents, which has been long advocated. Yet the Aaronic priesthood quorum theme didn't do that, which a lot of people were really surprised by. What was your reaction to that?
Yeah, that was, like you said, at the women's session of General Conference in October, there was a change to the young women theme, which, like you said, has been advocated for, myself included. Mm-hmm. And it brought me to tears, frankly, because I was so glad that it finally happened. So to see that the Aaronic priesthood quorum was going to have a theme, and to see that Heavenly Parents or Heavenly Mother was not acknowledged, that was quite glaring to a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It just kind of gave me the feeling of, well, nice try. Can we try again in the spring at that conference and maybe adjust that? We're adjusting so many things.
It came out after the other one. I think that's what was surprising to people.
Yes.
If the young men or Aaronic priesthood theme had come out sooner, then I think it would be understandable possibly. But I think that's what threw people.
Agreed.
Yeah.
So as part of the, you mentioned the home center, church supported, and really not strong overview of how to accomplish this. Do you feel like, in some ways, the sense of community is lost if the church is going so far towards individuality and not really building a communal experience?
There has been something lost. And I don't just say that from my own experience. I say it from things that I've observed and things that I've heard people talk about. The idea, of course, of going from 3 hours on Sunday gathering together to 2 hours is that, the extra hour would be used for family or personal study. But I think that for those who find themselves in situations where they aren't in what we would consider a traditional mother-father-children family situation, and who desire that, I think that yearning, that longing for that could be exacerbated, and the accompanying pain, to be honest. But I've also heard of people getting creative, meaning, a group of single friends. I'm not saying it's the same. But again, people getting creative and kind of doing their study in other ways. I think of, perhaps a widow in a ward who relies on church community so deeply for social connection. And that extra hour of even sitting together in a room is now gone. I don't know about your experience, but mine has been that with the two-hour block now, I just don't talk to people as much anymore in the halls and things. I mean, the study on the second hour seems to be more focused, seems to be more maybe concentrated. Maybe that's the maybe that's the effect of it having, you know, Sunday school every other week sort of thing model. But yeah, I do think that there's been a piece of community lost. And I say that living here in the Salt Lake Valley. I remember, you know, living back east where you'd stay an extra 45 minutes, an hour just to talk to somebody because they're, you know, another Mormon mm-hmm. in your life that mm-hmm. you don't get to see on the regular. So
which of all the changes this year do you think are the most significant? Which ones do you think have gotten the most attention and maybe the least attention?
I think that the missionaries being able to phone home, that has been most significant for me personally, looking through the lens of being a missionary mom, for sure. I think that there has been, you know, some, I don't think that the civil ceremony and then no waiting period for sealings has gotten a ton of attention. I think that as far as the policy reversal, from my perspective, that was part of an ongoing conversation that's been happening since November of 2015. I think what we will see as the biggest effect in practice is the children youth development curriculum, because that will be something that it's another huge change. And so as we kind of, you know, try to maneuver our way through that and what that looks like, and hopefully be patient with others as well as patient with ourselves, that will be one of the biggest, as far as the announcements go, that's something that will, that we will see the biggest kind of effect from practically. Mm-hmm.
Can I go to the civil ceremony thing that you mentioned?
Yes.
You mentioned this earlier. Do you see a lot of members taking advantage of that around here where you know what I mean? I'm talking about Utah or the United States. Do you think it still hasn't caught on yet as a viable option, I guess you could say? I mean, I think a lot of people think it eventually will have a big effect, but have you seen it yet?
I have not. Mm-hmm. And I agree. I think it will take time, because it isn't just policy-wise or even that it's an option. It's the culture.
It's cultural.
To be honest, I mean, I was surprised when after it was announced and I was talking to my daughter who's a missionary, and I talked to her about it, and she kind of shrugged, and because she plans to get married someday, and she kind of shrugged and said, well, I'll probably still get married in the temple. Now, I didn't go into it more with her because she's 20, and I'm not going to have that conversation with her. But at the same time, it's something where I hope to, when the time comes for her, as she plans to get married, to really consider the implications of what that means. Because, like I said before, my experience, and I don't want to project on her too much, but I also can't help it. I'm her mom, and that's what I do. you know, talk about, you know, we've got these family members, and this is an opportunity. But realizing that when you've been kind of taught that that's the goal is to get married in the temple, then that's going to take a while. Mm-hmm. It really is, mm-hmm. I think. Have you seen?
Do you think that there will be kind of a, you described judging. Do you mm-hmm. think there'll be kind of a two-tiered observation, which is that people who are really righteous only do the temple, and people who are less than do both? Do you think that's going to happen?
I think it. If so, I think that will largely be, like a lot of things, a lot of acceptance or truly being okay with any of these changes. It might be generational. It might be something where, and it might even be where people, you know, on the surface are like, oh, no, that's great. That's what we're doing now. And that's completely fine, but then privately wink wink, like, we know that something's going on there. But to be honest, like I said, I really do think that things with, and I'm hopeful that this might lead to a greater or maybe a more pervasive understanding that things in the temple are private. We don't invite a bunch of people to our endowment ceremony. And when it's a wedding, you've got the added complication of, okay, how many people and what can the room hold because we're limited? Whereas if you have a civil ceremony, that actually alleviates that. Mm-hmm. You can have all the people you want and just have it be family if you want. It's a private, you know, covenant. So
you say in some ways, respects, the temple ceremony might be put in a more proper perspective
as to what
it should be.
I do. I think so, because I think it will, you know, we often tie the endowment ceremony and going to the temple for the first time to something like missionary work. You know, you're going to the temple because you're going on a mission, or you're going to the temple because you're going to get married. And that actually, to me, makes the experience in the temple ancillary to something else. And I think that can be the case when it's a temple sealing, because it's more about the celebration, about who's there, when really I think this is a better way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, let's go on just this year now and look at Russell M. Nelson's presidency so far.
Yeah.
What surprised you about it?
Isn't he tired?
I mean, he is 95 after all.
Yeah. At this point, nothing surprises me about him and what he's doing. I mean, he. Gosh, how do I talk about President Nelson? The wheels are always spinning. There's always something in the works. The temple's announced. I just. What was the question?
And obviously traveling.
Yeah, traveling.
As much as
traveling the planet is something that I don't know how he physically keeps up, but it is clear that he wants to reach the world. It is clear that he knows that the members of Christ's Church, you know, have a desire to be in the presence of the prophet, and he wants them to know that they are loved, that they are seen, that they are heard, and that I think overall we can see with a lot of these changes that there's a focus and an understanding of this truly being a global church, that hopefully, well, personally, I'm crossing my fingers, that hopefully, you know, I don't even know if it's possible to get away from it being the American religion, because it just is. Mm-hmm. But to have an understanding that it's not just us here, it really is a global religion.
I know that he's wearing out us on the news side at times.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
Yes.
I can't even, yeah.
Jenny Dai, thank you so much.
Thank you so much
for joining us
today.
And thanks to Peggy Fletcher Stack.
Always a pleasure.
And to our producer, Sarah Weber. We remind our listeners that they can keep up on all the happenings in and about the church by subscribing to our free weekly newsletter. Just go to sltrip.com to sign up, and we'll talk again next week on Mormonland.